This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Introducing Celebration Key, your key to paradise. Unlock Carnival's all-new exclusive destination at Grand Bahama, where you can dive into clear lagoons, try all the water sports, or unwind on a mile-long pristine beach with breathtaking sunset views. This vacation paradise has it all. Celebration Key, welcoming guests in summer 2025. Carnival, choose fun.
Copyright 2024 Carnival Corporation, all rights reserved. Ships registry, the Bahamas and Panama.
After 6 years of reporting remotely on the Damien Heard case, I'm hitting the road to Gunnison, Colorado. I'll retrace the final steps of Damien's life as we cover all the key locations from the investigation. Along the way, we'll talk to Damien's close friend Courtney Birch, his former boss Scott Frazier, and key witness and hiker Linda Nienhauser. As you'll hear, the story is far from finished. Join me on a road trip to discover what happened to Damien Heard and who, if anyone, is responsible. From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Heard. Episode 11, Road Trip. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Thanks for listening. Before hitting the road to Gunnison, I reached out to Damien's close friends. I felt a duty to let them know that I was doing a podcast on Damien's death and the events surrounding it. And of course, I was also hoping they'd agree to do an interview. As I mentioned in previous episodes, my offer to participate in the podcast was declined by wrestling captain Kyle Pyatt and teammates Zach Schenck and Devin Zavala. But another person close to Damien did agree to talk to me on the record. Courtney Birch, one of the roommates at the wrestling house where Damien attended a party on the last night of his life. In her interview with Gunnison Police in 2014, she referred to Damien as her little brother. Her emotion and concern for Damien was touching, and I knew her insight would be incredibly valuable to my reporting. So in June of 2020, I gave her a call.
Hello, this is Courtney.
Hey, Courtney. My name is Claire Sanima, and I'm a journalist working on a podcast about the life and death of Damien Heard. I know this is a blast from the past.
I gave Courtney my usual pitch, which I'm sure you recognize by now. And to my great relief and appreciation, she was willing to talk to me. I wanted to find out what she thought happened to Damien.
I can try to answer the questions you have.
Sure, well, thanks so much. I know this is, like, totally out of the blue and not what you expected when you picked up your phone, so...
No, not at all.
I really appreciate that. That's very kind of you, to even take the call. I guess my first question would just be, what do you remember about Damien? When you hear the name Damien Heard, what do you think about?
Damien was a great kid. I mean, I lived with quite a few of the wrestlers, and Damien stayed at our house during the summertime before he moved into his dorm rooms. He was a good roommate. He was a good friend. Good kid all around.
Yeah, it sounds like he had a lot of really close friends and a lot of people who loved him and really enjoyed being around him.
Yeah, that would be how I would describe him, yeah.
The reason we're having this conversation is because of what happened to end his life. If you don't mind, what do you remember about the last weekend of Damien's life? What do you remember about that Saturday night?
Well, it was a party at our house.
Courtney ticked through a number of the details from her original statement to police, including the fact that she had gone to a bar with her parents the night of the party.
My parents had happened to come up that weekend to see me, and the last thing I remember was Damien was asleep on the floor in one of our bedrooms.
Because I have pored over the police reports and the timeline in this case for years, I was immediately surprised by Courtney's description of the last thing she remembered being Damien asleep on the floor in one of the bedrooms. In her interview with Gunnison Police, Courtney said Damien was not at the wrestler's house when she arrived home that night. This is from her original interview with Detective Chris Danos on April 10th, 2014.
I got home at between 1:30 and 1:45 and he wasn't there, that I saw at least.
But when Courtney spoke to me in 2020, she remembered things differently.
I came home, I mean, he was there, he was sleeping, and sometime between when I went to bed at 2 o'clock that morning and when I woke up the next morning, he was gone.
This statement lines up with what several people initially reported in Damien's case, that around 2 a.m., the freshman was asleep at the wrestler's house. This would mean he did go back to the party after getting gas. But it also runs in contradiction to Courtney's original statement to Gunnison Police in 2014, when she said she got back home to the house around 1:30 a.m. and that Damien was nowhere to be seen.
I know this is a long, super long time ago. Do you remember what time you saw Damien asleep in the house?
I had gone out to the bar with my parents, and I know that we left the bar about the time it closed, and the bar closes about 2, and he was asleep when I came home, he was asleep on the floor, I went to bed, so it was probably like 2:30, when I got home from the bar, and when I woke up, he was gone the next morning.
I told Courtney about my confusion with the timeline.
One of the things I'm trying to do is just go back and recreate a timeline, you know, as best as I can, and to try to see if there are any holes I can fill in, pieces of information I can put together that would give the family some peace, give the friends some peace. One of the key things that no one seems to know is what time Damien left the house. And did he come back after he got gas?
I wasn't at the house that night. I mean, I remember seeing Damien before I left for the bar, before I left to go out with my parents, and my parents and I went out to dinner, and then we went out for a couple drinks, and I came home, and when I came home, he was asleep. The way our house was set up is there was 2 bedrooms in the back. One of them was my bedroom, and then my other roommate's bedroom, and he was asleep on my other roommate's floor.
Okay.
And that's the last time I saw him. I mean, and that was like 2:30 in the morning.
2:30, you think?
It's hard to remember back, but
sure.
Yeah, I mean, you figure the bar closes at 2, you know, and that's when we left.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does make sense.
It actually makes more sense to me that it was 2:30, not 1:30, when Courtney got back to the wrestler's house after being at the bars with her parents. If you recall, wrestling captain Kyle Pyatt told police he got back to the wrestler's house about 3 a.m. after going to a different party, and he remembered talking to Courtney on the couch. This one-hour time shift actually corroborates Kyle's statement and fits into a more understandable timeline. But it does mean that Damien returned to the wrestler's house after getting gas at 1:30 a.m. And that means somehow, some way, Damien left the house again.
Oh, should we start this show?
Yeah, I'm down. Just buying a car in Carvana first.
Ooh, for real?
Yeah, it's super convenient. I already got pre-qualified in 2 minutes. All I had to do is answer a few questions.
Ooh, that's helpful.
And now just customizing my down and monthly payments.
Ooh, that's a very fair deal.
Yep. Boom. Just bought a car. And you get to take me to the Carvana vending machine in a couple days to pick it up.
Ooh. I'm kind of busy.
Visit Carvana.com to finance your next car.
Financing subject to credit approval.
What makes a Carnival cruise fun? That's up to you. Maybe it's a ride on boat, a roller coaster at sea, or a deep tissue massage at the spa. Creole-inspired cuisine at Emerald's Bistro to laid-back bites at Guy's Burger Joint. Excursions that take you from jungle adventures to beach days at Mahogany Bay and sunsets from the top deck. Long story short, no one does fun like Carnival. Carnival, choose fun.
Ships registry: Bahamas, Panama.
Do you ever meet someone who seems kind of off? Whether it's a creepy neighbor or random phone number that keeps calling you, Truthfinder has you covered. You can search for people by name, address, phone number, email, and more. Truthfinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you're planning to meet from online dating apps. Go to truthfinder.com/podcasts for a special offer. That's truthfinder.com/podcasts to access your special offer today.
It's definitely something I haven't thought about in some time.
Of course, the other possibility is that 6 years later, Courtney is mistaken about the time she got home, and her original statement of arriving back at the wrestler's house at 1:30 a.m. and not seeing Damien is the one that's accurate.
I mean, we were kind of a party house, so there was usually people asleep somewhere randomly in our house. You know, when you wake up and someone's gone, you know, you figure they got up, they went home. So it's not something that immediately alarms you.
So when did you realize that something was wrong?
I think, it's hard to remember back. I think maybe somebody tried to call him, we couldn't get a hold of him, you know, went to his dorm room, whatever, then realized he didn't show up to practice or didn't show up to school.
As you already know, one of my key points of interest is how Damien was signed into classes on Monday, March 31st. So I asked Courtney about it.
Do you remember whenever he was missing, like that he had signed into class on Monday? Did you ever hear about that?
You know, I heard so many different things. Kind of remember hearing something like that.
That's one of the things I would love to be able to put to rest or explain, is that he was signed into class.
I mean, Western is a small school, so I mean, a teacher, I feel like, would have noticed whether he was there or not. I mean, I don't know if you know much about the university, but it's not like big lecture style classes. It is small, like 20 to 25 kids in a class.
In the police report, the way it's described is that they had email confirmation from his professors that he had been in class. It's just another question mark in the timeline. Like, could he have possibly been in class that day? And then the cafeteria use, you know, I can see signing a friend into class, like, you don't know where they are, you don't want him to get in trouble for skipping, so you sign him into class, totally innocent. But then the using it in the cafeteria, it's like, well, it really seems like it's him in between the two classes.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't even remember how we swiped our cards to check into the cafeteria. I want to say you have an ID card that you like scan when you go into the cafeteria, is what I think we did.
You know, I got even more details from some of Damien's friends that said that his ID card, you couldn't actually swipe it because the magnetic strip was damaged. And so you had to punch in the whole ID number. And so that made it even more unlikely that it wasn't actually his card. Because who memorizes someone else's ID number?
Right. I don't remember that.
I needed to ask Courtney about the next big marker in the timeline on Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014.
Do you remember how you heard that his body had been found?
I do. It's actually, I was in bed, and my roommates had actually come into our room, and we were watching TV, and we were all kind of sitting in my bed together, and one of my roommates got the text message. I believe it was from their wrestling coach, that the body had been found, and we were all together when we found out. I do remember that part.
That must have been awful.
Yeah, it was.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry I'm making you relive that. And do you remember, you know, what happened next when, you know, the police came to the house or what the...
The police came to our house. They asked for any stuff that we had that might have been his. I think we gave them whatever jacket or backpack he might have left behind. I know that they questioned each of us individually. I mean, I remember having to go down to the police station and being questioned, but I happened to not be home that night. I mean, I was there when they were all there, and I left with my parents, and when I came home, the party was over type of situation, so I wasn't questioned as much as everybody else was, because I wasn't there that night. I had gone out with my parents, like I said.
Right, right. And in terms of what the police were trying to determine, was there a question of whether or not somebody had hurt Damien, or this was something he had done to himself?
I mean, I know that was a question that they had asked. And I know that his dad was pushing for the fact that someone had hurt him. And obviously, again, I wasn't there. I don't know. But for me, the Damien I knew, I don't think would have hurt himself. But I think when you're doing drugs, you're not the person you are. Drugs are going to obviously alter your state of mind. So whatever happened that night, I think drugs played a part in that.
Is that a question you still have in your mind? Did he do this to himself or not?
No, I think being on drugs, I think, altered how he thought and what was happening for him. And so I do think it, ultimately, I think it is that he did it himself. I don't know anybody that would have wanted to hurt him. So to me, I just can't imagine anybody doing that to him. I don't know who would have wanted to hurt him.
Do you feel like there are still unanswered questions about what happened to Damien and why?
Yes and no. I mean, more so the only that he could answer, like, what was happening in his mind, what made him feel like he needed to end his life. I think had he not done LSD that night, I don't think he would have had the thought to do what he did.
It was so good to get Courtney's perspective, and her thoughtful answers made me think that Damien must still be fresh on her mind.
All these years later, do you still think about Damien?
I do. Now it's from a different standpoint. It's from the standpoint of a mom. At the time when it happened, obviously it was heartbreaking and sad. This was my friend. This was the person I lived with. This was somebody I cared about and loved. But now as a mom, it's even harder to think about this because I have all boys. I'm a mom to four boys. And to think about this being your child, you know, now seeing it through his dad's eyes, you know, like my child is gone. It's harder. And I do think about it all the time. What if my kids go off and they are drinking and doing drugs, and you think about it very differently as a mom now than I did at the time?
Yeah, a mom to four boys. Well, after living in the wrestler's house, you must be well prepared for that.
Yes, I tell people all the time, I'm like, there's a reason God had me live in that house, because I am prepared now for all of the pee on the bathroom floor and all of the messes and all of the stuff.
I can totally see that. I can see how that would be good training ground.
Yes, it definitely made me a better boy mom, I think. I'll have to thank all of those boys I lived with one day for making me a better boy mom.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm so grateful, you know, that you took this call. And like you said, you know, as a mom, as a parent, this is the absolute worst thing that could have happened, you know, to lose a child. And
it is. And I think that, I mean, his dad's never going to feel closure. At no point as a parent, if you lose a child, are you ever going to feel closure? Nothing's ever going to make it okay. You know, it doesn't matter if I had all of the facts. If I was that parent, it wouldn't make a difference because it's still your child and they're still gone.
With Courtney's interview complete, it was time to head to Colorado. As much as I love using technology as a journalist, there are some things you just can't learn from a phone call or a Google Maps search. I wanted to see for myself the town of Gunnison and the campus of Western Colorado University. I'd originally planned on flying into Gunnison from Dallas and saving myself the 13-hour trip by car, but with the global pandemic, air travel seemed a more complicated choice. I decided to go on a road trip instead, and in July 2020, my husband and I took turns driving the 790 miles over 2 days.
Starting route to Gunnison.
Here we go.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on.
After spending the night in Amarillo, Texas, and with our first speeding ticket under our belts, we crossed the state line into Colorado and headed west. As we approached Gunnison, I realized we were on Highway 50, the very road that Damien's car traveled to the death scene at Cabin Creek. I'd thought about this drive a million times, and now I was finally seeing it for myself. It was interesting to me because as we neared Cabin Creek during the daytime, the landscape opened up and the turnout was very visible. It should be noted that this was the opposite route that Damien's car would have taken that night, since he was coming from the Western campus and not Texas, but it did open my eyes to the fact that Damien might have been familiar with the Cabin Creek turnout simply from previously driving up to Colorado from his home in Texas. I couldn't just drive past Cabin Creek after all these years of studying Damien's case file, and seeing it for the first time in the noonday sun would be a helpful scouting trip before making the nighttime trek to retrace Damien's alleged path that night. We pulled off the road and drove through the gate. I hopped out of the car at the turnout and flipped on my digital recorder. And I began searching for the tree where Damien was hung.
I mean, there's really no other tree out here that would even
come close to working. They're all so small. It's like bushes.
Next, I followed the fence line up from where Damien's car was parked to where his body was found.
It's a good little hike up here. It's kind of steep. Definitely not flat terrain. Not seeing any trash or anything like beer bottles or signs that people, you know, come out here and hang out.
After getting an initial look at the scene, we headed into town. One of the first things I noticed was how the whole city of Gunnison feels like an extension of the Western campus. There are signs for Western all over the place, along with advertisements catering to students in every business. Gunnison is one of the places where the college makes the town. The kind of place where, when a popular freshman athlete goes missing, it's the talk of the town.
Recording here, this is with Scott Frazier at Palisades Restaurant.
Damien worked as a waiter at Palisades, a popular off-campus restaurant. When I caught up with the owner, Scott Frazier, he was eager to talk to me. But because of the pandemic, we had to do it outside, on the patio, and wearing masks. The audio quality isn't great.
I hire a lot of athletes that wrestle up here at Western.
Scott is a Western wrestling alum himself. Gunnison police never recorded an interview with Scott, despite being Damien's boss and his connection to the wrestling team. Scott met Damien when he came up the summer before his freshman year for wrestling camp.
He was always in the underdog role because he was a little undersized for wrestling.
All these years later, Scott still thinks about what happened to Damien and the cloud of suspicion over the wrestling team.
The thing about the wrestlers is they're definitely family. They look out for each other 100%. And Kyle and Damien that was his little buddy, and he would protect that kid no matter what. And even though, you know, there were some things that happened at that party, heard that he got knocked out by him.
In case you didn't catch that, Scott said he heard Damien got knocked out by Kyle Pyatt at the wrestler's party. But Scott said he never heard anything else beyond that.
The wrestlers were involved in that situation. I don't think that they could keep a secret. If one person knew and only one person knew, then that might be something. But if a couple of people knew, I think it would spread like a brush fire.
I wanted to know if Scott knew anything about the other theory in Damien's case, the one involving the track team.
The two avenues of foul play were, as you talked about, the wrestlers, and then the idea that possibly his fight with the track team had come back. You know, they came back to finish the fight. Is that something that you ever heard?
I'd never heard anything really about the track team. I don't think anybody could keep that secret. If that makes sense. Everything that I was always involved with was his dad was really pushing for the wrestlers. And that was very unfortunate in itself. Because of the way that all happened, it really diminished the honoring that the wrestling team could do for Damien. Because they were such a dark spot. There were kind of talks about, you know, let's do a scholarship for him to honor him with that scholarship.
I've heard that, you know, and that was impactful to me to hear that, you know, so many of his wrestling teammates wanted to do something to honor him and that they felt like they couldn't. And that's another layer of just the sadness to this story because they don't feel like they were able to actually grieve the loss of their friend and to tell everyone how much they loved and missed him. And because there was this strange cloud of suspicion that they might have had something to do with his death.
Mm-hmm.
And how painful that would be. Even now, you know, as I reach out and talk to them, I can hear the pain in their voice that they really, you know, they've told me, I loved that kid, you know? And that's something that has come up over and over again. They said, we couldn't even really talk about how much we loved him and missed him because it was going to be possibly misconstrued.
One of the people who felt that way was Ryan Pello, Damien's wrestling teammate.
I think what hurt the most was that when stuff happened with his dad, most of the guys felt freaking hurt because they couldn't honor him at all. we were told, you know, we just had to sit there and be quiet about it.
What do you mean you had to sit there and be quiet about it?
So, for example, you know, we wanted to honor him on, like, our posters and stuff like that. Now got axed by... It wasn't like, you know, they were suppressing it, and I could see their optics of it. We had to respect, like, their dad's views and stuff like that. Because, you know, the dad, you know, had questions that were unanswered. And, you know, obviously they're still not unanswered. But, I mean, it was one of those things that we didn't want to kind of offend him at all. Because, I mean, we didn't want to escalate a situation. The way I think of death, too, is, I mean, you just got to remember the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, memories speak power than whatever you put on a poster, in my opinion. Because we do kind of our mantras, and we would just do, like, be heard and stuff like that.
And see, I really think that would mean a lot to his dad, to know that you guys did say that, and you thought that, and you wanted to do it more, but it was such a charged situation. But I'm telling you, that's going to mean something to him, that you did that.
My next stop was the wrestler's house, where the party took place on March 29th, 2014. We surveyed the property from the sidewalk.
So we're at the wrestling house at 620 North Taylor Street. It's literally one block off of campus. Everything in this town is really close. It's just a very small town. And, you know, if you were walking, or as Damien was wont to do, longboarding around, you could definitely get everywhere you needed to go very quickly.
In addition to seeing the wrestler's house, I had to check out the alley.
So we're going back through the alley where he would go back and forth, and there was the so-called secret entrance to the wrestling house that was a back door out of Andrew Morris's bedroom that exited into the alley / courtyard.
It was just as Jessica De Aquila and Courtney Birch had described. The duplexes were connected by a back door that opened into the neighbor's alleyway. It certainly appeared possible to exit the wrestler's house undetected using this route. After scoping out the wrestler's house, we headed to another place we know Damien visited on the final night of his life.
Alright, we're coming up on Mountaineer Village Apartments, which is where the track party was, and also where Damien stopped to buy acid from Curtis Markham on the night of the party. Just a typical college apartment scene. I want to try to find unit 2303. I wonder if the numbers are the same. I'd like to drive around and see. 2303 and 2304 are the two units that came up. I always pictured them being right next to each other, but I wanted to see.
It took some searching, but we finally hit the jackpot.
And we found unit 2304, which is where Curtis Markham lived and where Damien bought acid at least twice, according to his text messages. And then we saw unit 2303, which is where one of the pole vaulters lived. And I wanted to see if they were next to each other, because the numbers are just one apart, and they are next to each other, but not the doors. They share a wall, but you wouldn't see the front door of 2304 when you were at 2303, or vice versa. So that was interesting, because I'd always wondered if it was possible that when he was buying drugs, that he was right next to the front door of the track party, and possibly there was another encounter. But now I see that the doors aren't actually right next to each other, even though the apartments do share a wall.
After covering those key locations, we called it a day and headed to our campsite for the night. And before you even think it, no, we did not camp out at Cabin Creek. I don't think I could have slept a wink if we were there. So we traveled on to Crested Butte and set up camp. The next day, I reached out to Linda Nienhauser, the hiker who discovered Damien's body 3 days before the police did.
It looked like a person standing up, camouflage jacket.
I left a card and a note at her office in downtown Gunnison and tried not to stare too hard at my phone. As fate would have it, I was actually on a hike when I got the initial call from Linda. She agreed to meet me the next day during her lunch break. Because of the pandemic, we talked outside, wearing masks. So please bear with me on the quality of this audio recording.
I know it was sort of out of the blue and 6 years after the fact. So, yeah, you know, I appreciate you just taking a little time out of your day to talk to me.
Okay.
So I guess my first question would be, can you take me back to the day that you went out to Cabin Creek and just sort of describe it for me, you know, from your memory?
Sure.
So I have an annual journey that I take every year about that time, and I hike up to a special place and honor my kiddos that died in a car wreck.
In case you didn't catch that, Linda said she takes an annual hike at Cabin Creek to remember her children who died in a car wreck. This was the same way that Linda introduced her witness statement in 2014, when she spoke with Detective Grace Callen. As I listened to Linda recount the story in 2020, it sounded very familiar, which is exactly what you expect to see from a reliable witness.
I had my dog, and we did our hike, and we were coming back. I thought I was up there by myself. I saw vehicles parked at the trailhead, and I saw some bicycles and, you know, kind of leaned up against the fence. But I didn't see any other individuals while I was hiking, so I just kind of thought I was on my own out there and was just enjoying a day and got, maybe a quarter of a mile away from the trailhead on the way back and looked up to the side of the hill, and what I thought I saw was like a campsite. So in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, there are some people camping over there. That's a weird place to camp. And I just wanted to give them their privacy. And so I wasn't really trying to, you know, watch them or anything. But I felt like I was being watched. So I remember the feeling like there's something going on up there. There are people. And I'm just going to keep walking.
Once again, Linda described two people.
And I saw an individual with camel pants and maybe a plain shirt kind of standing in one area. And honestly, what I saw in that moment was another person. I thought I saw two people.
Linda went on to describe a body in a curious position, with feet pointing backwards. It was the same story, virtually word for word, that she told Detective Grace Callen back in 2014.
It didn't make sense to me. I couldn't make sense of it in my mind.
Linda said she got in her car and left Cabin Creek.
When I was at work, probably the next day, they said something about there had been a body found out there. And I realized that wasn't a campsite, that what I had seen was actually Damien. I didn't know that when it happened.
Yeah, I'm sure it's the furthest thing from your mind.
Yeah.
When you see people, it's much more natural, especially in Colorado, to think that they're camping.
After hearing about the discovery of a body at Cabin Creek on Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014, Linda called the Gunnison Police Department and spoke to Detective Callen.
And then she came and picked me up and said, well, I'll just drive you out there and we'll go measure and show me where you were and what you saw. And as I recall, she picked me up and I rode out with her. And I just walked her down to the place approximately where I had been. And I said, this is what I thought I saw. But as it turns out, there were no footprints,
I was struck by the idea that Linda presented of going to the scene the same day that she called Gunnison Police. Because in the report, it wasn't until a week later that Detective Callen took Linda out to Cabin Creek.
And so was that the same day that you made that phone call, or was it the next day, couple days later that you went out there?
I can't tell you that.
Sure. Yeah, I know it's a long time ago. I'm trying to, just in my mind, piece together the timeline.
I wish it actually had been the same day that Detective Callen took Linda out to the scene. It would have been a lot more useful of a visit if the timing of it was in closer proximity to Linda's original sighting.
So you make the call. At some point, there's a trip out to the scene, and it's just you and Detective Callen?
Correct.
And then tell me about the next time you're meeting with someone from this investigation.
I don't remember any other meeting.
By my count, there are three additional interactions that Linda has with investigators on Damien's case.
I think there was a description that Frank Vader, the coroner, went out there with you?
Yeah.
How did that fit in? I think the coroner at the time was also investigating. I think he wanted to hear my story too.
To help jog her memory, I told Linda about the additional conversations cited in the police report.
There's one recording of you talking to Grace Cowan, and I think at that time, for whatever reason, your office wasn't at the courthouse. It was like...
at the airport.
At the airport.
Right.
Yeah.
So we met at the airport? I don't remember that.
You and Detective Cowan met at the airport. I think, if I'm counting it right, there's the phone call, there's meeting with Detective Cowan at the scene, there's meeting with Frank Bader at the scene, so that's three, and then the fourth time you met was at the airport, and that's whenever Grace Cowan recorded your conversation.
Full disclosure, when I went back and double-checked the order, Linda's meeting with Detective Cowan at the scene was actually the fourth and final interaction noted in the police report. Their recorded conversation at the airport was the third interaction and took place after Linda had met with the coroner. As Linda thought about all the different conversations she had with investigators, she shared why she thought they kept coming back to her with more questions.
You wanted more detail about that vehicle?
The white truck. Yeah, the white truck that you described with having a camper shell, and then I believe there was some type of pink around the license plate or on the license plate that you thought might have pertained to breast cancer awareness.
Yeah, it was one of those placards that frames the license plate.
Did you catch that? Linda described a breast cancer awareness license plate holder. She specifically said it was a placard on the mysterious white truck. If you recall, in 2015, Gunnison police told me that they looked only at white trucks with officially registered breast cancer awareness license plates in the state of Colorado. Police have never identified the vehicle that Linda saw at Cabin Creek.
The idea that it had something to do with breast cancer awareness was something they focused on because, you know, a white pickup truck. How many white pickup trucks do we see
right
just sitting right here, really?
Yeah.
We see one, two, three, four. I see four just in my view. So the idea that they tried to narrow it down with the breast cancer awareness, but as I understand it, we're never able to identify that truck. And no one ever came forward.
I also wanted to ask Linda about the other car at Cabin Creek, the black SUV.
I know it's been a long time, but as far as the black SUV that was believed to be Damien's, do you remember looking at that vehicle and anything about that license plate?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you what the license plate was, but it was parked right in front of the gate.
Yeah.
And so I had to walk right beside it.
Damien was from Texas, and so he had a Texas license plate. And I know sometimes people notice that in Colorado, and I didn't know if you happened
to. I did not.
It's also possible, based on the eyewitness statements from wrestlers Travis Bradford and Colin McNally, that Linda didn't remember the license plate on Damien's SUV because it had been removed. In their statements to police, the wrestlers said Damien's license plate appeared to be hanging by one screw when they saw the vehicle speeding out of town.
I like to respect people's privacy, so I didn't really peek in windows or, you know, I really didn't even look. And the only reason I noticed the white pickup was that I was parked beside it, and when I walked by it, I saw the pink breast cancer, and that kind of drawn to that.
Linda shared that in the spring of 2014, her own mother had recently died from breast cancer.
Those sorts of things that we have a connection to.
Yeah.
A lot of times will stick out to us and maybe another person wouldn't even notice it. Part of what I'm trying to do is just go through the case and talk to everyone who was involved, as many people as I can, and piece together a timeline to try to better understand when he was out there and what possibly, you know, might have transpired.
As any journalist will tell you, a classic wrapping up the interview question is always to ask the subject if there's anything they wanted to talk about that you didn't already cover.
I didn't know if you had, you know, with the benefit of time, any other thoughts about what you saw or...
So when I was back out there with Grace, there's a rock outcropping, and what I thought I saw was a person non-dealing with crouching. So when Grace and I was there, I was trying to point out, you know, exactly where that was, and we noticed the rock coloring was such that I could have just been seeing shadows, you know, variations of the rock colors and the shadows. You know, when I looked at it again, I thought, well, I was probably just seeing the striations of the rock.
Could have been. Yeah. But then again, you also saw a car and two bicycles, so yeah. Odds are there were multiple people out there that weren't Damien, just based on the fact that he couldn't have driven two cars and ridden right. two bicycles.
Right.
Linda's doubts about seeing a second person seem to be directly related to suggestions made by investigators, because every time she goes back to her own memory, Linda sees someone watching her.
You know, in my mind, and I'm seeing that scene again, and having someone crouch down watching me, I thought someone was watching me is what it felt like. And then trying to rectify that I probably didn't see what I thought I saw, you know, because there weren't footprints that corroborated that.
It would appear that investigators told Linda that the key evidence to refute her eyewitness statement is a lack of discernible footprints from when they visited the scene a week after her hike.
Something that I've gone back and looked at, you know, in the scene photos and the weather reports and everything indicated that there had been snow on the ground. There'd been a light frost on the ground. Mm-hmm. And so something that I considered in all my different theories of why you may saw what you saw or didn't see or explanations, you know, it's just the idea that if someone was there and they were walking and they walked in snow, mm-hmm. that it could have melted away. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there weren't, because we know there were other people out there. So the idea that there weren't discernible two other sets of footprints, mm-hmm. to me, I've thought one possible explanation for that could have been the snow or the frost on the ground melting, and the places where a foot would have touched, you know, might not show anymore. Because I also looked at Damien's feet, his shoes, and they didn't appear to have dirt on them, even though we know that, you know, presumably he hiked up there. And so, you know, they talked about, you know, evidence of one person at the scene being Damien, but the primary evidence they cited would be his car was there, his body was there, you know, and so obviously he was there. That's not in dispute that one person was there, but we also know that you were there. We don't see your footprints, you know, and so it's sort of interesting just to think about the idea that I've been walking around here. Have I left any footprints? You know, we don't always leave the tracks that we think we do.
I told Linda that I had recently visited the scene to try and better understand the statement she gave to police and their interpretation of it.
I went out there a couple days ago just to check it out. And so I went to that rock cropping because one of the things that was asserted by the Denver Police Department Lieutenant Matthew Murray was that in his viewing of the scene, which is just based on photographs, he didn't believe that there was space for a person to crouch in that rock cropping area in front of the body. But I found that there was, you know, not to say that there was a person there, but I found that there was space where a person could have fit.
At this point in our interview, Linda started to sketch something on the notepad she had in her lap.
You drawing the...
So here's the tree.
Yeah.
This is where the tree was. The person that I saw was here, not here.
Okay.
It was around the corner a little bit.
Okay, around the corner a little bit.
I mean...
Yeah.
Not directly beside where Damien was, but over.
Yeah, and I mean, there's plenty of space there. There's like a ledge. There's like a, you know, there's place for people to stand.
Linda has never truly wavered in what she saw. She's listened to every investigator and every theory, but she can't shake the feeling that there were multiple people at Cabin Creek on Sunday morning. And from where I'm standing, there's more evidence to believe her than ever before.
You played a role in this case in that you gave a timeline for Damien's body because, you know, the last known image of him is leaving City Market gas station. It's 1:36 a.m., pumping the gas in the camo hoodie, and then he drives off, you know, out of view of the cameras. And from that point on, pretty much there's no cell phone activity
No one has admitted seeing him in person after that. And so the body's found on Wednesday at 10 a.m. That's his date of death, listed as April 2nd, because that's when they found the body. But they also write in the report that a witness saw the body on the 30th, Sunday. So without you, you know, they might not have known where he was in those days.
Linda's perspective and eyewitness account are, to me, the most interesting aspects of Damien's case, and it's still never been fully resolved who and what she saw out there. I didn't come all the way to Colorado to hold my tongue, so I decided to ask Linda one final question.
Well, I don't know if I'll be able to do this or if you would even be open to it, but something that I've come across in my reporting is the concept of a cognitive interview. It's an interview that's supposed to help people recall memories that they saw, and it's used a lot of times with, you know, trauma victims, and they're trying to remember what they saw. They're trying to remember any description of their attacker, and initially they think, I have no idea. And they do these cognitive interviews where they, you know, different relaxation techniques and memory aids, and been proven pretty effective, you know, in those situations. I know of one in another case that I covered where a woman witnessed a shooting. And she, at first, was just totally frozen by what she saw, and she was later able to, through this cognitive interview, describe not only the shooter, but what was really key was the vehicle that he got into. And she even described it down to not just the color and the shape of the body of the car and everything, but a particular pattern on the back windshield that ended up being cat tracks. Found this car, they found it in a storage unit, and it had cat tracks across, and they were able to tie forensically with other evidence, and it was the actual shooter.
For reference, this was the 2013 murder of prosecutor Mark Hassey by Eric Williams in Kaufman, Texas. The eyewitness who positively identified Williams' getaway car after a cognitive interview was attorney Linda Bush.
As I was looking back at your statement and your memory of it and talking to some experts who do cognitive interviews, one in particular said I think she'd be an excellent candidate for a cognitive interview because she has a clear experience and memory and has certain times in her mind and things that would give her sort of tent poles. So I just was curious if you would be open to that. If I were able to arrange it, would you be open to a cognitive interview?
I believe I would be, because here's the deal. I know that losing a child...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So, knowing that his dad has questions, you know, and wanting to, you know, to kind of put some kind of borders around it and give him some peace, I'm willing to help if that is a possibility. You know, right now I think I've said everything I can remember, but if there's some vehicle to get more...
If you could possibly, through the cognitive interview, be able to describe those vehicles in a way that might be able to identify them. Who knows? We don't know until we try.
I was so grateful that Linda spoke to me, and the fact that she's willing to do an interview with an expert in memory recall is incredibly encouraging. I was pretty pumped up after talking to Linda, and I could hardly wait to go back to the scene at nightfall and recreate Damien's route. But in order to be as authentic as possible, I wanted to wait until it was dark. And because it was summer, that meant a very late night. I'm one of those morning people whose eyelids start to get heavy around 9:30 p.m., so we got a hotel room in Gunnison and decided to get some rest before our trek. I set an alarm for midnight. My husband and partner in crime would accompany me to the scene for moral support as well as physical security. What can I say? If you find someone who will go to a mysterious death scene with you at midnight, never let them go. We started our journey at City Market Fuel Center.
Okay, it's our last night in Gunnison, and we are retracing what we believe to be the final steps of Damien Hurd. We are at City Market gas station. We're going to fill up with gas, and then we're going to head out to the scene at Cabin Creek. We're going to
gonna see how long it takes us to get there. Here we go.
In half a mile, turn left onto East Tomichi Avenue.
It's honestly pretty creepy being out there, knowing that that was the last place that Damien was seen alive, pumping gas just like he did, and taking off down this route.
One of the first things I noticed was just how dark it was.
I know when I talked to Matthew Murray, he said there was a lot of ambient light in Colorado, but it does seem pretty dark here. We'll see what it looks like once we get out to the scene.
We continued driving, and before I knew it, we were on Highway 50.
There's no streetlights. There's little reflectors on the side of the highway. Every so often, we see, of course, the headlights of oncoming cars. But other than that, there's no other light out here. Suddenly, we're out here in nature, even though just a few minutes ago, we were practically on campus.
I tried to put myself in Damien's shoes, and going with the theory from law enforcement that Damien was suicidal and looking for a place to end his life after leaving the gas station.
I'm just looking, to see, is there any other place to turn off? And I haven't really seen one yet, besides private land. It's really dark out here.
As we approached the Cabin Creek turnoff, I was struck by how quickly we got there.
It's interesting because on Google Maps, it made it look like it was like 13 miles away from campus and maybe as long as a 30-minute drive. But whenever you actually drive it, it does not take very long. And it's actually right next to the mile marker for 164, even though the police reports listed it as Bureau of Land Management Road 3106. Whenever you get up to the location, it's actually Bureau of Land Management Road 3107. So it's not quite as it appeared on paper. We've slowed way down so we don't miss it. There's a sign for a deer crossing. Definitely doesn't look like there's anything here. If I didn't know I was looking for this, I feel like I would just blow right past it. I think that's the mile marker right there, so I think it's going to be right here on the left. How would you ever see this? I don't think you would even know there was a road here. I would have never known there was a road here if I hadn't seen it during the daytime and planned to come out here.
In case that didn't paint a picture for you, the Cabin Creek turnoff is nearly impossible to see at night, even when you know it's there and you slow down to just a few miles an hour. It's not a place that jumps out at you or looks inviting in any way.
This is where you parked. Let's do it. Alright, so this time it took us 9.5 minutes to get out here. We were going more slowly. Still, that's, 10-minute drive. That's not much.
We waited for the car lights to turn off and let our eyes adjust to the darkness before starting our hike up the ridge.
So he would have had to walk like this too. I mean, it's pretty precarious here. Okay, first obstacle.
The area around the gate has a cattle guard, consisting of narrow beams over a hole in the ground. It wasn't easy to navigate, especially at night. I noticed that it was a pretty bright night out at Cabin Creek.
The moon was full like it is tonight. You do have a good bit of light out here. It's definitely something I don't want to look up.
When I got home and looked at the moon phase from my trip to Gunnison in late June 2020, it was almost a full moon, with 76% of the moon visible. That's quite a bit different than the moon on the night of March 29th, 2014, when it was only 1.4% visible. In other words, non-existent. After hiking all the way up to the tree and surveying the scene from that vantage point, we headed back down to the car.
The part that really sticks out to me was how hard it was to find this at night. You could not see from the road any type of marking,
that there was a turnoff here. That goes back to my question that I've had all along. Did Damien know this place existed? Did someone else tell him about it? Was he meeting someone here that told him where to go? Or was this a place that he'd been before and he went out looking for a secluded spot like this? It's of course possible that he was just driving slowly through this remote area and discovered this, but it really was out of the way.
When we got back to our hotel room, I noticed something that gave me pause. My jewelry was sitting on the nightstand next to the bed. Without even thinking, I'd taken it off before climbing into bed. And when it was time to go to Cabin Creek, it didn't occur to me to put it back on. I'd been trying to recreate Damien's steps, and I wondered if I had inadvertently solved one of the mysteries in his case. Damien's diamond stud earrings have never been found. One possible theory is that they were stolen off of his body after his death. But another theory, that I quite literally stumbled upon in my own hotel room, was that Damien himself took off his earrings before going to bed at the wrestler's house party. They were never found because he was sleeping on the floor of Andrew Morris's bedroom, a room that Courtney Birch said was, quote, trashed, even before the party started. This is from Courtney's 2014 interview with Detective Chris Danos.
We just have all these, like, little roommate battles where we all, like, throw each other's mattresses off our beds and flip all each other's stuff up.
The new timeline that Courtney gave in 2020 of seeing Damien asleep in Andrew's room around 2:30 a.m. after he got gas at City Market made sense to me, with the idea that Damien could have taken off his earrings at the wrestler's house before unexpectedly leaving again, for an unknown reason, to head to Cabin Creek. I already had a lot to think about, but my trip to Gunnison wouldn't have been complete without going by the police department to introduce myself in person and give them another chance to participate in my podcast.
Starting route to Gunnison Police Department.
Well, I'm all the way here. Glad to see if they'll finally talk to me. Here goes nothing.
As you might have guessed, they wouldn't talk to me on the record. In fact, it took multiple days of going by the department before they'd even send someone out to meet me. But I'm not one to give up easily. So finally, Captain Chris Wilson, the public information officer, agreed to say hello. Despite my best efforts, and I did effort multiple times, he wouldn't agree to an interview. But we talked for over an hour, and something Captain Wilson said has stuck with me to this day. Because he wouldn't let me record our conversation, I'm paraphrasing him. But the gist of it was this. If there was a murderer running loose in Gunnison, I wouldn't be able to sleep. I wouldn't rest until we found them. This is my town, Captain Wilson said. And I'm offended that anyone would insinuate that I'd be okay with sweeping homicide under the rug and letting a killer go free. We could have kept this case open forever, but after 6 months, we felt we had enough evidence and that no crime was committed. I believe that Captain Wilson genuinely thinks that Damien Hurd's death was a suicide and that there was no foul play. Respectfully, I'm still not convinced that's the case. But his words did stir something in me. And when I got back to Texas, I listened to all the witness interviews yet again. I was drawn to these words from Damien's wrestling teammate, Frankie Marquez. This is from a 2014 interview with Detective Grace Cowan.
I know, like, a lot of people are saying, like, a lot of the signs don't lead up to what happened, but I had a friend that ended up committing suicide on my wrestling team my junior year in high school. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with him. He just took two different things and ended up dying. And I don't know, like, what his dad's going through and stuff, mm-hmm. but, you know, sometimes you don't have to be depressed or have anxiety to take your own life.
Frankie's statement got me thinking, is there a connection between wrestlers and suicide that I've been missing? I've played a variety of sports all my life, and I've never known an athlete who committed suicide. But two of Damien's teammates, Francisco Marquez from college and Bryce Bassinger from youth wrestling, brought up examples of suicide. I knew I had to look into this more. I told Damien's father, Gary Hurd, that I would follow the story wherever it took me. And I think I just found a new road on the map. On the final episode of Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd, we'll explore alternate theories that could explain how the wrestler ended up in a jumper cable noose on a frozen cliffside. We'll look at signs that point to suicide.
Amateur wrestlers take considerable blows to the head, have a very high concussion rate relative to other sports. Your brain is who you are. Your brain is your personality. Your brain is your behavior. Your brain is everything you say and do. When you change your brain, you change who you are.
Signs that point to homicide.
And innocent people don't need to lie. All those things were downplayed, every single one of them. And some of the excuses and things that they used to downplay those statements were utterly ridiculous.
And everything in between.
I guess I keep thinking about, like, what brought him into the woods? Like, what was it that got him in there?
That's not him. He would go to a party, but not the woods.
Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One and Live by Live. Each episode is written, reported, and produced by me, Claire Sanimal. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Songs licensed from PremiumBeat.com are Bending Truth and A Thin Line. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of LucyMedia.com. Additional production help from Amber Robinson, Janice Sue, and Elise Weber. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanimal. Special thanks to Courtney Birch, Scott Frazier, Ryan Pellow, and Linda Nienhauser for talking to me in this episode. Tune in next week as we continue our search to understand what happened to Damien Hurd and who, if anyone, is responsible.